Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to the Mick Clifford podcast of the Irish Examiner. Now, this week we are given a snapshot of how we are in the world. The summary result for Census 2022 was published, and they show that, among other things, there are more people in the state than at any time since the mid-19th century, and that adherence to religion is falling among the population. Here to discuss the results and what it says about us, I'm joined by Senior Statistician at the CSO, Cormac Halpin. Cormac, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Mick.
Cormac, if we could start with the big one, quite obviously, population. We have, as I mentioned there, we're at an all-time high to the extent the first time in 150 years, and it's well over 5 million at this stage.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, Mick, we released this week the summary results from the census, which people might remember took place in April of last year. And I suppose the headline result from the census is that the population has climbed by 8% since the last census, which was in 2016. That's 390,000 people. And it's now at 5.15 million, which is the highest population since 1851, which was just towards the end of the famine. So that's a real milestone, I think.
Very much so. And the other interesting element to it is that this increase is broken down between kind of natural difference between births and deaths and then net migration into the country, isn't it?
Yeah, that's data that we release after every census. So the last few censuses, the main driver of the population has been natural increase. So effectively more people being born than people dying. The other driver being net migration. And it is the net migration that's primarily driving the population this time round. So we estimate that 219,000 approximately of that rise came from net migration, which is 56% of it, with the balance then about 167,000 or 44% coming from natural increase. So that's a change that I think is primarily attributable on the natural increase side to a decline in birth rates since 2016 and a gradual, more gentle increase in the deaths. So that's definitely something that's changed from the last two censuses.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I suppose breaking that down in terms of 6 years, Cormac, you're talking about net migration into the country of around 30,000+ a year. Which is very interesting considering presumably the vast majority of those are just coming in here to work.
Yeah, well, we have some data in this release. As you mentioned at the top, this is a snapshot. This publication will be producing much more information as the year goes on, particularly in areas like migration and diversity. But we know, for example, that apparently around 250,000 people indicated that they came to live in Ireland between 2017 and 2022. And of that percentage, majority of them were non-Irish nationals. About three quarters of that figure were non-Irish nationals. We will release more information about the age profile of those, but certainly based on past censuses, the age profile tends to be of working age.
It does. And would I be right? In general terms, it tends to be of a younger working age. Perhaps we're talking about people in their 20s or 30s. And I'm just, what strikes me about that is, what is interesting from that perspective is, with an ageing population, an influx of younger workers would then suggest we mightn't be as badly off in terms of the ratio of those working versus those dependent, which, as I understand, is decreasing all the time.
Yeah, well, just to pick up your last point there, we have figures in our report about age dependency, and that is certainly increasing, as you said, as the population ages. There's you know, proportionately more older people compared to working age population. But yeah, as I said, we can't be definitive as yet because we're still crunching the numbers. Like good statisticians, we've lots and lots of data to still work through. But certainly based on past experience, the preponderance of people who tend to come in tend to be of working age. We've no reason to expect that'll be anything different this time round.
And do you have any figures, or do you compile figures, or have you a way of knowing, Cormac, in terms, you say that the people come in, do a certain cohort of those stay a short time and go out again? Or in general terms, is it your experience that they tend to stay here long term?
well, you probably wouldn't pick up that kind of detail in the census. I mean, the census is really just a one night in time kind of approach. But certainly it's something that the CSO, the wider CSO, is looking at in terms of migration flows, because, you know, there's considerable interest, I mean, both here at home and internationally, on migration flows. So it's certainly something that we're putting a lot of effort into and would hope to produce kind of more detailed statistics on a regular basis in the coming years.
Okay, and then internally, the other interesting issue in terms of population increase is geographic. And correct me if I'm wrong, but just my initial look at it, it seems that those increases very much so are more on the eastern seaboard around the greater Dublin area, the counties that surround Dublin, and far less so in the west. That trend, it appears, is still there.
Yes, that's broadly the trend, Mick. I think what's notable this time round for the census is that the population has increased in every county. That wasn't the case between the 2011 and 2016, the last intercensal period. So the population growth is most pronounced, as you rightly indicate, in the east of the country. So counties like Kildare, Meath, Fingal, Longford have all recorded population growth of over 10%, which is higher than the average for the country. But then if you look at the west of the country, so counties like Donegal and Kerry have only grown by 5%. But I think the main thing that we've noted is that there is that population growth all the way across the board. But it's not an unusual trend that the growth has been concentrated in those areas, particularly the kind of, the, for want of a better phrase, commuter counties around Dublin.
Yeah, that would indicate, and I suppose there's a suggestion of that. Now, obviously, it's not, probably there's numbers on it, but that, the terms of overdevelopment in the greater Dublin area, the commuter counties, possibly at the expense of development in the west. But that's a matter for policymakers and industry and what have you. Now, the other element then with population, Cormac, is the average age, and that again is creeping upwards.
Yeah, it's quite a big jump in average age. Now, we do have to bear in mind that the census is, there's a 6-year gap between census this time around, when normally we'd have a 5-year gap. But the average age has gone up from 37.4 in 2016 to 38.8, so nearly 39 years in 2022. I mean, there's all kinds of interesting statistics that we've released this week to support that. Just an interesting one to throw at you there. The number of 0 to 4-year-olds is down 15%, which, you know, reflects that what we talked about in terms of the birth rate. Whereas the number of people who are 85 and over is up 25%. And as I said, that's kind of repeated across the board. So the number of people who indicated they were retired, for example, on the census form has also increased significantly since 2016. So it's a very clear trend there that the population is growing, and it's also growing older.
So the birth rate is declining, Cormac, but it seemed that decline seems to have accelerated a small bit over the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, well, just to kind of give you a bit of data on it, Mick. So the birth rate, or the number of births in 2016 was 64,000, whereas the number of births in 2022 was 57,000. Now, 2022 is the whole year as opposed to just the census, but that gives an indication of how it's been declining. It's a relatively gentle decline, but it is a noticeable decline, and it has been happening for quite a number of years now. And just in terms of deaths, there was 33,000 deaths in 2016 and 31,000, so it's a little bit more static, but it's certainly the declining birth rate that's impacting upon the natural increase that we're seeing in the census.
And tell me, in terms of European-wide, Cormac, I knew at one stage people suggested that notwithstanding our ageing population, we were pretty young relative to a lot of Western European countries. Does that still apply, or are we catching up with them, do you know?
Well, it's a bit of both. It does still apply. We would be, in general, younger than most, not all European countries. But that average age increase, which is a crude measure of the age of the population, but it is, you know, a relatively big jump between censuses between 16 and 22. So we're certainly going in the direction that most European countries are going.
And so would I be right that you could extrapolate from that nearly that we're going to have a declining workforce, and as of now, what would be filling some of that gap, but most likely not all, is migration into the country in order to keep up towards some way the ratio of those working versus those dependent. Do you know what I mean? That in terms of the workforce that are effectively supporting those who will be dependent, but under people who aren't working and people who are retired, in order to ensure that that's relatively big enough, we're going to have to increase a certain amount of migration in order to fill the gap through the ageing population.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the CSO is always a bit careful when we get into extrapolating and predicting future trends in the data. But, you know, certainly based on what we've seen between 2016 and 2022 in terms of births and deaths and natural increase, that will mean that if that trend was to continue going forward, you know, the population would continue to age. We would see more people retired and a relatively smaller cohort of the working population to support them, if you want to think of it that way. And one possible route to increasing the younger working cohort is through inward migration. But again, you know, that's extrapolating trends. And we've seen in the past that trends can change between censuses.
Yeah. One thing I noticed here, I just looked back over previous ones, just kind of an indication of how much we are ageing. Year 2000, the average age was 31.8, and in 1980, 26.3. So that really shows the amount we're aging by. But of course, we're coming from a scenario whereby we had pretty big families here for a very long time. That's changed completely as the country's developed and we've become more in line with other European countries and what have you and that, but it is stark and it is definitely something that policymakers are going to have to take into account in a major way.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cormac, just turning to religion, always an interesting one. I see we've about 1,800 Jedi warriors?
Jedi knights, I'm not sure
Jedi
if they're different
knights, religions. Jedi knights, sorry, yeah. Have we declining Catholic population?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is another trend that's been happening for quite a while. Religion is an interesting concept or question because it's been on the census for quite a long time. I mean, it's been asked in different ways over the years. It's even changed between 2016 and 2022 when the question was slightly changed. But yeah, in general, there has been a long-term decline in the proportion of the population who indicate that they're Roman Catholic. So between 2016 and 2022, the proportion who indicated they're Roman Catholic fell from 79% of the population in 16 to 69%. So that's a 10% percentage point decline between the two periods, which again, it's over 6 years, but it's quite a big fall in relative terms. So we have been asked what's the impact that the question change had on that, because the key aspect of the question change was that no religion became the first category, whereas Roman Catholic was the first category last time round. It's difficult to you know, quantify the impact that the question change had, but we did change, we did some testing on the question change before we implemented it on the form, and we did find that the results the new question produced was quite similar to the results of the 2016 question. So it looks from that you know, the decline may be a kind of a natural occurrence over time. There probably is some impact to the question, but it's certainly something that we've seen for quite a number of years.
Yeah, I suppose it's that. And as I understand the question, what is your religion, if any? Is that the way it was framed? Yeah, that if any, it's nearly as if it gives people who would be, if I could describe this religion, when I'd be very familiar with myself, lapsed Catholic, it gives them that moment's pause to think, well, am I a Catholic or not, or whatever, which is, and I, to be honest with you, I think it probably makes for more accurate delving down into what the actual situation is. And what about other religions then, Cormac? Have we any particularly fast-growing religion, particularly perhaps from those who might be coming into the country?
Yeah, well, the second biggest group is not a religion, if that's not a contradiction. So people who indicated they had no religion increased from 10% of the population to 14% of the population. So that's nearly 750,000 people indicated they had no religion this time round. But yeah, if you look at the kind of the other big religions, one of the big growth areas, for example, was Hindu, which ties in with the significant increase in number of Indian citizens who arrived between 2016 and 2022. So there was a 140% increase in Hindu. So it's relatively small numbers compared to Roman Catholic, for example, but went from 14,000 to 33,000. And you kind of see that when you look at the religions in the census. You see religions like Christian Orthodox becoming more prominent, you know, primarily due to inward migration from Eastern Europe. So the religion question, you know, with the exception of some of the maybe more unusual ones like Jedi Knights that you mentioned, tends to reflect, you know, the kind of the socio-demographic profile of the population, which is always interesting to look at.
It is, and going back again, because it was just a separate project I was involved. I looked back at the census in 1961, and I think the actual figure for no religion in total was 1,102 people, which is fascinating when you think about it. In a country then, let's for argument's sake say it was 2+ million, maybe 2.5 million, and by 71 that went up to nearly 2,000. And as you said there, something like 750,000 now have put down no religion. I mean, that shows you that is fascinating, the changing society that is shown there. Okay, well, and moving on to health. One thing I saw interesting in terms of some of the elements of health, again, gives a real snapshot of society, is in relation to carers, Cormac, and particularly unpaid carers.
Yeah, so the number of unpaid carers has gone up quite a bit since 2016. And again, I'm going to give this boring statistician's caveat where we're interpreting the numbers. So they've gone up from 195,000 in 2016 to nearly 300,000, so a 54% rise. The question on unpaid carers on the census form did change quite a lot between 2016 and 2022. So it became more all-encompassing. So the question asked about providing not just help, but also support. And it indicated that the categories of people that might be cared for, so family members, neighbours, or a friend with a long-term illness, health issue, or an issue related to old age or disability. So that was a lot more kind of expansive, if you like, than the question that was there in 2016. Again, which may have had an impact on the number of people that indicated that they were caring. But, you know, it also might be related to the fact that the population is getting older. And we know that, you know, older people tend to have more requirements for caring, possibly. So, you know, I think between those two phenomena, we've seen quite a big jump in the number of carers.
And was there a particular age cohort in their 50s that represented quite a considerable section of those?
Yeah, that's where the age where most people are most likely to be doing their caring, which again is quite possibly an indication of you know, the aging population and maybe, you know, people providing care for a spouse. But we will produce more detail on the carers and maybe some information about the type of people that are living with them. I mean, the caring isn't always for people in the same household, but oftentimes it is. So we'll be able to look at the age profile of people in the household with the carers, and we do more dedicated work on that later in the year.
No, education. A drop again, which is a very positive thing, I think, in societal terms, in the number of people who finished their education before they were 15. And what looks to me like a big rise in the number of those who hadn't finished their education by the time they were 25.
Yeah, and this is another long-term trend that we've seen in census figures. So the first figure you referred to there, the people who finished their education before the age of 15, went from 183,000 people down to 150,000 people between 16 and 22. So that's a drop of 16%. I think, you know, a major driving factor there is it tends to be kind of older people who have ceased their education, you know, at primary level or in early secondary school level. And as people of that age cohort maybe pass away between censuses, that number tends to drop. And then conversely, as you mentioned, you know, people with higher levels of education goes up. And again, this is something we've seen over time. The number of people who didn't finish their education until they were into their late 20s, if you like, after 25, went up 48% from 255,000 to 375,000. And a kind of corollary is that is the number of people with honours degrees up 36% from 331,000 to 450,000. So, yeah, as we kind of move on in time, the population is getting higher educated. I think that's a fair assessment of it.
It is. And that's full-time education, I presume, Cormac, is it? So
that's full-time education. Yeah. I mean,
so we're talking kind of about, generally speaking, well, my interpretation, maybe I'm wrong, but generally speaking, you're talking about there, if somebody's in full-time education at 25 or late 20s, they're doing postgrads, PhDs or something beyond a primary degree, which is, as they call it, fourth level now, which is at the very least, a large cohort of those would be accounted for by that, which is interesting how educated we as a country seem to be getting now. Right, housing. What have we got in housing?
Well, the first thing I'd say is that some of the statistics that certainly generated the most amount of attention the last time we did a census, which was around the size of the housing stock and the vacancy level, aren't included in this report. So we will be producing a dedicated report on housing at the end of July. But, you know, there's lots of interesting stuff that we have produced in this report. It pertains to occupied housing. So we haven't looked at the unoccupied homes as part of this. So the key statistic, I suppose, reflects the population is that the number of occupied dwellings that were occupied on the night of the census increased from 1.7 million in 2016 to 1.84 million in 2022. So that's a jump of 8% in line with the population. I think what's possibly generated the most amount of interest is the profile of the ownership of those dwellings. So we've seen a drop in the proportion of people who own their own home from 68% in 2016 down to 66% this time round. But I think to me, what's almost more interesting is if you look within those categories, the number of people who owned their own home with a mortgage or a loan fell from 536,000 to 531,000. So not a huge fall there. But the interesting one is that the number of people who own their home without a mortgage, so you know maybe people who've bought their home or completed their mortgage, went up 12% from 612,000 to 680,000. So that could be another reflection of the aging population, that there's, you know, proportionately more older people and more of them tend to own their own home. So that's an interesting one. The rentals then is up from 310,000 to 331,000, a jump of 7%. And the number of people who rent from a local authority also up 7% to 153,000.
Yeah, that is interesting. And it's just a quick one there, you mentioned home ownership got 68 to 66,000. And I know it's always been out there, but I suppose just in relation to the public debate and so much of it that is on housing, we're still talking there about 2/3 of the people owning their own home, which is interesting enough and might explain why, in terms of some policy decisions in government, why they're treading carefully or whatever. Also, as you say, people renting increasing again, that's obviously another part of that trend. One other thing then, which I must say I was interested in, Cormac, the number of people speaking the Irish language.
Yeah, so again, the headline figure there is an increase. So the number of people who said they spoke Irish increased from 1.76 million to 1.87 million in 2022. So that's a jump of 6%. I think, you know, digging into that number, it's interesting to see the number of people who spoke the language daily outside the education system. So doesn't include children in school. It fell marginally from 74,000 down to 72,000. We've also produced new statistics. The question on the Irish language was expanded in 2022 to look at the level of fluency that people who speak the language have. And it tends to be younger people, particularly in their 20s and 30s, who could indicate that they can speak the language most fluently. It falls off then again until we get to much older people in their 70s and 80s who indicate that they speak the language very well too. So that's new data, new statistics that I'm sure the people involved in the domain will be very interested in seeing.
Definitely, I'd wonder, I suppose, some of us to do with the Gael Scoilna phenomenon, others to do with people might still have a bit from school. And, you know, it is fashionable, definitely, to be speaking Irish, was in some circles. But I maybe I'm just a cynic, or maybe it's because of the appalling standard of my own Irish. I'm a bit sceptical when I see such high numbers of people. And I just wonder, on that, Cormac, it's the actual census form from which the CSO draws all of these stats. Do you place a high degree of trust in it? I mean, I suppose you've no choice, really, in terms of how it's answered and that sort of thing, and how much of an actual reflection that is as to how the country is in relation to all these areas.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to me, you know, having worked in the census for quite a while, that the proof of the pudding is in the eating. It always astounds me about the range of people, organisations, you know, both national, international, that rely on census data to conduct their business. You know, we always talk about, you know, it's used for, you know, planning schools, roads, you know, transport networks and so on, which is absolutely true. But, you know, all the way down to kind of local historians up to international organizations, there's a huge amount of demand for the data that we produce. I think which was reflected in the amount of media coverage that came out this week. I mentioned a competitor here. We got a live blog on the Irish Times at the time, which I thought was only reserved for football matches. So it was great to be in that kind of rarefied atmosphere. But yeah, it's trusted and relied on by a very, very wide range of organizations. And you know, we've been told lots of times that if the census data wasn't there, their work would effectively become guesswork. You know, this kind of puts hard numbers on, you know, it's the evidence-based policy that so many organizations, not just government ones, require. You know, we know lots of private organizations, supermarkets and so on, you know, use census data to make decisions about where they locate their business as well. So it's very, very valuable. And you know, it's a very trusted source as well.
Absolutely. No question about that. And then is from here on now, Carm, once you've delivered these summary results, will there be a series of reports over how long that'll delve down into particular areas? Is that how it'll operate now for the next period going forward?
Yeah, that's the thinking, Mick. Effectively, the report that we released this week was kind of like an executive summary. You know, we're very conscious that it's 6 years since we produced census data. You know, the census was due to take place in 21, but for obvious reasons related to COVID, it couldn't go ahead in 21. And, you know, so all those users I mentioned, they've been clamoring for census data since then. So we felt the duty to release as much information as we could as early as possible. So that's what we've done this week. But we will now take the opportunity over the rest of the year to really dig into the data, to you know, look in more depth at some of those areas we talked about and tease out, you know, people often ask, why has this happened, or and so on. And often digging into the data can reveal and shed more light on why that's happened. So we will be producing thematic releases on areas like health and disability, on diversity and migration, on commuting, on work and employment all the way through the year. We have other statistical releases planned, like we're doing a joint one with the Northern Irish Statistical Office next year, a kind of an all-island publication, which will be coming out maybe around this time next year. So, yeah, we've lots of stuff planned. So for a statistician, that's manna from heaven. We've got to immerse ourselves in the data for the next year or so.
I can well imagine, yeah. And finally, Cormac, as you say, because of COVID, this was originally supposed to be 21. And going into the future now, will the next one be 5 years' time, or will it be 4 years' time? Will it be 26 or 27 after this? Will you go? Will you make up that extra year, or will it just be 5 years out from 22?
Well, it's going to be in 2027, Mick, and the main reason for that is because it's going to be a very transformative census. So we're planning and working towards a digital census. So most countries that do the census the way we do it, which is actually very few countries, believe it or not, certainly we're almost unique in the European context of doing the census this way. But certainly most of the English-speaking countries, so the UK, the US, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, would do what we call a traditional census, which is where you go out and ask the people questions. They would all have an online census, and that's where we're heading for next time round. There's a considerable amount of work, and unfortunately for some of our colleagues in some of those countries, there's been some bad experiences with going online. So, you know, it will take us time to get that up and running for 2027. But that is our plan, that, you know, you won't at first instance in 27 get an enumerator knocking on your door and dropping the form in. You'll receive a letter inviting you to log on, put in a PIN code and complete your census return either on your phone, your tablet, or whatever the technology is going to be in 2027. I wouldn't like to predict the way AI is going, but that's what we're working towards. So it'll be a different experience for everybody, but hopefully it'll still deliver the same high quality data that people are used to.
And that's interesting just from one point of view, and maybe again, it's my own foibles or whatever, but do you have any information on those countries that have done that, whether the response rate is as high when it's done digitally rather than dropping it in door to door?
Well, there's an interesting anecdote almost on that one. The UK, well, England and Wales, I should say, held their census in 2021, in March 21, which was right in the teeth of the COVID pandemic. They got a staggeringly high response rate, which our colleagues from the UK would tell us is because people had nothing else to do. They were locked down, so they were happy to do their census form. So I wouldn't be wishing the pandemic on us for 27. But yeah, it does introduce challenges, and we're very conscious of that. You know, we've long kind of extolled the virtues that there's nothing as good as having an enumerator knocking on your door, you know, coming back, sometimes hassling you to get the form back. So there will have to be a change. And, you know, I think for us, awareness is going to be absolutely crucial. You know, we do put a lot of effort into our awareness campaign, our publicity campaign, that the time capsule was part of that for 2022. That's going to have to be ramped up even more, because not everybody's going to have somebody knocking on their door. They certainly will have someone knocking on the door if they don't complete the form online to ensure we get that high coverage rate. But, you know, ultimately, we are looking for cooperation from the public, you know, and if we get it, we can deliver these high quality results. And, you know, sometimes you hear that people saying it's a hassle and so on. But, you know, the social capital and the social good that comes out of having this data is really enormous. And there have been studies done in the UK and other countries that show, you know, the value that a census delivers to decision makers, and it dwarfs the amount that it actually costs to undertake a census. So, you know, we do rely on people's cooperation, and we'll be relying on that again in 27.
Absolutely. And as you said, it is fascinating, because it really does, particularly in today's world, it's actually a rare example of real hard evidence of what the story is. And I suppose that is why people are most fascinated by it. And we will see over the coming months the various reports that the CSO follow up with when you do deep dives, as the phrase goes, into a lot of these areas. Cormac Halpin, thank you very much for joining us today and filling us in on that.
Thanks, Mick.
As always, like to thank our engineer, JJ Vernon. Thank you, folks, for listening. We'll catch you again next week. Take it easy.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.